I'm going to echo again what Edwin said about conflict. We are talking about part two of resolving conflict in marriage, but much of what we're going to say this morning would apply equally to any conflict you may have with anybody. It may not be a spouse, it might be a child, it may be a parent, it may be a sibling, it might be a best friend, it may be a schoolmate or a person that you work with, or a neighbor. We're going to talk this session, continuing the idea that we began yesterday morning. I took one of my favorite songs by the Beatles, We Can Work It Out, and took phrases from that song, and we dealt with aspects of resolving conflict based on that. So we began with, do I have to keep on talking till I can't go on? We talked about the need to listen as well as communicate effectively what we want to say. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still you think that it's all right. It's important for us to state accurately the situation that we're in. And then there's a chance that we might fall apart before too long. That is reality. Conflict can destroy, absolutely destroy, a relationship. So, the last phrase that we'll look at, we can work it out and get it straight, or say good night. I want to talk with you in this session about an apology, how to give it and how to get it. I want to begin by talking about some practical aspects of apologies, and then I want to move to two biblical passages that I think represent for us a beautifully stated apology, and then talk about the principles of accepting an apology. Both are important. If one person extends the hand to say, I'm sorry, the other person has to extend the hand to say, you're forgiven. So we'll talk about both those aspects in a few moments. How to give an apology and how to accept it. Some of you are old enough to have remembered a movie that was made with Ryan O'Neal and Barbara Streisand, a comedy made in the 70s called What's Up, Doc? And in that movie, which followed on the heels of one of the most popular movies, romantic movies of all time called Love Story, in which a line was uttered that became so popular for my generation in my teenage years, love means never having to say you're sorry. Well, in the movie What's Up, Doc?, at the very end of the movie, Barbara Streisand is trying to make amends with Ryan O'Neal on an airplane, and she says, I'm sorry. And Ryan O'Neal says, quoting that line, love means never having to say you're sorry. And Barbara Streisand looks at him with this puzzled expression and says, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I don't know that it's the stupidest, but it ranks up there. Because you can't get through life effectively without having to say you're sorry. So, let me tell you though, there are 10 kinds of apologies. I'm going to go through these rather quickly. 10 kinds of apologies that you should be sorry for. I'm saying if you give these kinds of apologies, you need to be apologizing for your apology. Does that make sense? You'll know what I mean when I give them to you. Number one, the premature apology. The premature apology is this. Look, I'm sorry. Now, can we just drop it? It's the person who jumps to the apology to avoid the conflict. The conflict hasn't been resolved. Whatever has brought up the tension has not been dealt with. But one person thinks, if I'll just offer a quick apology now, then we can move past this and go on with our lives. So, it might be something like this. Husband and wife are starting to feel a little tension, and she immediately responds in the tension, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Can we just move on? And the problem with that is the issue hasn't been dealt with. And that apology isn't effective because you haven't even gotten to the point of understanding what it is the apology is for. Number two, an apology of expedience. An apology of expedience is this. I'm sorry, is that what you want? Think about that. I'm sorry. Okay, is that what you wanted? You want me to say I'm sorry? I'm sorry. You want me to say I'm sorry? I'm sorry. Again, that hasn't dealt with the issue. You're not dealing with the issue at all. You're just giving a person what you think they want to hear without having acknowledged that you truly have done something wrong in that situation. And then there's this one, the reverse or partial apology. This one's the one that I've mentioned already I have been guilty of frequently. I'm sorry, but... It goes like this. My wife is helping me drive. She does that frequently. Paul is really good at finding a better parking space. It doesn't matter where I want to park. She can find a better parking space. So I get ready to pull into a parking space, and Paula will tap on the window. No, no, there's another one down there. Tap on the window. Tap, 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 tap. You can probably tell. It drives me crazy. The tap, 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 tap. There's a better one down there. I go down that way. And she, oh, look, there's another one opened up further. Closer to this. I'm thinking, if we can just get the double doors to stay open, I can drive on in, you know. We're getting closer and closer here. So she's doing that. And then maybe I lose it. And I say, would you please stop? Stop. And then I give this. You know what? I see the hurt look on her face. I'm sorry. But when you do that, it drives me crazy. Now, what have I done? I've negated my apology. I've said, I'm sorry for what I did, but really, you made me do it. It's really your fault. So, Paula has forbidden me to offer any apology that has a but with it. I can't do that. She won't accept it. I'm sorry, but anytime you add the but, it's going to be a negation of the apology itself. You can't do that. Now, you may say, I'm sorry, and then later come back and say, I don't know if you realize it, but when you do this, you can do that later. You can talk about it later. But if you offer the negation that comes with the but... It always, or but I had a hard day at work, or but I've got a headache, or but the kids are driving me crazy. When you offer that, you've negated the apology. You've actually offered a reason why you did what you did. And the apology is no longer effective. Leave the partial apologies or the reverse apologies alone. Here's an absence of malice apology. I wasn't trying to hurt you. Now, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to hurt you. What that apology says is, you know, I did this, but it wasn't done in malice. Listen, I realize that a lot of conflict is caused by people doing things that aren't done in malice. But you still owe an apology for that. It's still an apology. A guy goes to open an umbrella and hits me with one of the splines on the umbrella. He may not have intended to do it. He may not have said to his friends, hey, watch me draw blood on this guy coming up. He may not have done that. But if he hurts me, he still owes me an apology. And saying, I wasn't trying to hurt you, isn't going to take away the fact that people are still hurt. They still are bothered by that. An absence of malice apology isn't sufficient. Nor is the non-responsible apology. The non-responsible apology says, I'm sorry, but it's really not my fault. It goes like this. I'm sorry this whole thing happened. Let's just put it aside and go on. Did you notice what was missing in that? Any culpability on my part. Did you notice that? I'm sorry this whole thing happened. It reminds me, I remember one time being in somebody's home with a young man. And there were some kids that were had come into the room to play, and we were getting ready to eat supper. And this young man was playing with the kids, and they had a favorite toy. And all of a sudden, I heard one of the kids start crying. And I looked over, and this young man was holding this toy, and it was in two pieces. And I looked at him, and the parent came in and said, "What happened?" And the child said, "He broke it." And the young man said, "It broke. It broke." You know, like the toy was sitting there and said, "I think I'll be in two pieces." It didn't break. Somebody broke it. You may drop something, and you don't say, "It dropped." You dropped it. And if it hit the floor and shattered, you don't say, "It shattered." You say, "I broke it." And so this kind of apology, this non-responsible apology, "I'm sorry that this happened," isn't an apology. It's not claiming any responsibility at all. Now, you can offer an apology in which you're not responsible at all. A car goes by, splashes mud up onto the sidewalk, and there's a young lady or a young man, they're standing there looking, and they're covered in mud. You certainly could walk up to them and say, "I'm so sorry that happened." But that's not really an apology on your part, unless you jumped in the mud afterwards and added to the mess. But don't offer apologies in conflict that don't show your responsibility for some part of that. There's the bitter apology. We've offered this one. The bitter apology says, I'm sorry. It's all my fault. It always is. I'm always wrong. You know, my fault. I know, again, my fault. That's a bitter apology. Now, I realize, I've said this to other people in the past. I have a friend named Larry Coggins who wrote some rules of marriage. And Larry's pretty insightful. He said, "A man can be a fool and not know it, but not if he's married." The bitter apology is this: I'm at fault. I always am. Yeah, you're always right. I'm sorry. You're always right. There's no apology in that. Nobody comes away from that saying, "Well, good, I'm glad you admitted it." Unless that is also offered in sarcasm. You know, so you get two sides of that, both sarcastic. "I'm sorry, it's my fault, it always is." "You're right, it always is." Now, nothing's resolved in that. Nobody feels better about that. Nobody says, "Good, now let's kiss and make up." The bitter apology doesn't work. Don't give it. It doesn't make the situation any better. It only increases the tension. There's the evasive apology. "Hey, let's not be mad at each other anymore. Hey, let's not be mad. Hey, let's just kiss and make up." No apology is found in the evasive apology. There is an attempt to make the situation better, but it won't make it better until someone says they're sorry. There's the ceasefire apology. The ceasefire apology goes like this: "Look, I'm willing to say I'm sorry if you are." You ever offered that one? "I'm willing to say it if you are." And then if he or she says, "Okay," then somebody says, "You go first." You know, that kind of "I'll admit it if you'll admit it" isn't really admitting you're wrong. It's not really an attempt to resolve the conflict. It's an attempt to spread the blame. And I'm not saying both people don't need to apologize. There have been numerous times where I've said to my wife, "I'm sorry," and she has followed up with, "Well, I'm sorry too." But you don't offer the apology with that condition. You don't start out with that. "I'll do this if you'll do that." There's the blame-shifting apology. Sounds like a good apology until you hear the end of it. "Well, I'm really sorry you're so sensitive. I'm sorry those things bother you so much." Now, what have you really done? You're really apologizing for a shortcoming in your spouse. You haven't apologized for yourself at all. You've really politely shifted the blame to them. "Well, you're so prickly about things. You're so sensitive about things. I'm really sorry you're inadequate." That's really what that apology says. And then the last one is the blame-sharing apology. It goes something like this: "Well, I guess we're both just really worn out and cranky. I didn't admit that." But if the person says that, well, that seems like, well, we're both at fault. We're both at fault in this. And so I'll just go ahead and apologize for both of us. You don't have a right to do that. That's not an adequate apology. So let me tell you now what a good apology looks like. You really need to mentally take notes on this. A good apology has three elements to it. I want to show you the perfect apology. Turn with me to Luke chapter 15, would you please? Luke chapter 15. This apology is being offered after an individual has wiped out a family fortune. He has done that through some horrible judgments and decisions that he made. No one else is responsible. And now, after he has wrecked everything that he can possibly wreck, I mean, brought it down to absolute zero, he now has nothing. He only has the clothes on his back. He's reduced to that. He now wants to try to make it right with the people he has wronged most. It's the parable of the prodigal son. He took his father's fortune, and as the scriptures tell us, he squandered it with loose living. He didn't even invest it in a company. It wasn't a matter of, I thought it was going to be a good investment and be a good return for my labor. It wasn't that at all. It was just blowing it. Wine, women, and song. He has blown the fortune. His brother said of him, he's devoured your inheritance, his inheritance with prostitutes. He is living a horribly immoral life. And then he realizes, I've done this. But when he comes home, there is no element of those 10 poor apologies. None whatsoever. This apology he offers to his father is beautifully stated. Listen. Chapter 15, verses 18 and 19. I will get up and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. That is perfect. Now, I'm not saying the father accepts it only because it's a perfect apology. Because, in fact, the father never even hears all of it. But this boy has understood what a true apology is and why it works. There are three elements to a perfect apology. Number one is regret. I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. There is genuine regret. An apology should always come from a realization you've hurt someone you care about. That's why you apologize, because you care about somebody. I mean, I'll have to tell you, if I'm walking down a sidewalk and I step on an ant, or I step on a worm and don't kill it, and it's writhing there, I don't bend over and apologize to it. I have no relationship with that creature. You may feel differently, but I would not do that. But if I care about somebody or think they have value, then I certainly will apologize. And that might extend sometimes to animals. I mean, if I accidentally step on a dog's paw or a cat's tail, I'm probably going to apologize. Even though I don't think the animal's going to hold a grudge against me, I probably would apologize because I think it has some value. When someone has value and you have hurt them, you recognize that you have done that and you apologize. And that's called regret. And it's not a shared regret. I'm sorry, but you shouldn't have been in my way. Or I'm sorry, but you made me do this. Or I guess we both are just tired and we're popping off. It's none of those things. He doesn't say to his father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight, but, if you had only told me how bad the world was out there, I wouldn't have gone after it. Or if you had only given me a little liberty, I wouldn't have taken so much. Or if you had only been kinder to me, I wouldn't have run away from home. Or if I hadn't had an older brother who doesn't like me, I would. There's none of that in this. And he might have used all those. And I've heard people use all those. If you only loved me more, if you only loved me differently, if you had only given me this, if you had only given me that, then I would have been better. I've heard people who said, I'm sorry I committed adultery against you, but if you had only been a better husband or wife, I wouldn't have. That's not an apology, folks. There's no real regret in that. There's only shared blame. That doesn't work. I love the fact that he blames no one. He doesn't say even, I thought I had a bunch of friends, but they weren't really friends, and I realized that too late. Or if there hadn't been a famine, I probably could have gotten along better. He doesn't say anything except, I have sinned. And the second element, besides regret, listen, without regret, an apology is cold. If you don't express your regret that you've hurt someone, the apology is cold. If I cause my wife to cry because my words have been harsh, I need to say more than just, I'm sorry. I need to say, I'm sorry I hurt you. I need to say, I'm sorry my words were so rash. I'm sorry I lost my temper. There's no one I love more than you. And I would not want to hurt you like I did. I don't want to do that. I'm sorry. That's an apology that has regret. Number two, an apology that has responsibility. Accepting total responsibility for your actions or your inaction. It may be that it's your inaction. It's something you didn't do. Take responsibility for it. A true apology owns up to it. Notice what he says. I have sinned. Not I made a mistake, I made a judgment error, I did something I probably shouldn't have done. There's no apology in that. There's no acceptance of total responsibility. They pushed me to do it. I shouldn't have listened to the advice other people gave me. That's not an apology. That's not a good apology. You have to accept total responsibility for your actions. Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. There's not one element of shared responsibility in that. There's not one accusation in that. There's not one finger-pointing incident in that. There's not one attempt to evade his actions in that apology. Without responsibility, an apology is no apology at all. It's not an apology at all if you don't accept the responsibility for it. And then there's the third element, a remedy. Notice the young man offers one. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. What? Make me as one of your hired men. Here's my solution. Punish me. Don't make me a son anymore. I'm not worthy of that. I'm not even asking to be readmitted and reinstated as a son. I want nothing of the inheritance from this point on. Make me a hired man. Now you have to understand, his statement to be asked to be a hired man puts him absolutely lowest on the totem pole. Here's what you had in a household. You had the patriarch who headed the household. You had the children who were under him. Then you had your household slaves. The household slaves were treated like members of the household. Abraham's household slave, Elimelech, was so loved and favored by him, Abraham wanted to make him his heir. So a household slave would be named, would be cherished, might even sit at the table with a family, was much loved. And then you had hired men. And the hired men were like day laborers. They had the family had no long-term commitment to them. Didn't ever have to owe them anything other than a day's wages. You could cut them loose at the end of the day and send them on their way and never see them again. This son doesn't ask to be a household slave. He reduces himself to the least responsible and cared for position in the household. Make me as one of your hired men. Now, he thought his actions warranted that kind of remedy. You can't undo the past, but you can offer a plan to prevent future hurt. A good apology offers a remedy. So it might sound something like this, because without a remedy, an apology is empty words with little hope. How many of us have had somebody apologize for something, and whether we stated it or not, we thought, it's only a matter of time before you do it again. This is going to come up again because it always does. We've all been there, haven't we? We've seen that. A coworker who comes in and says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry I'm late for this meeting. And in our mind we say, and you'll be sorry again tomorrow. Or within a few days. Because it's your pattern, and this is what you'll go back to. Or a person who spouts off with a temper and blasts away and then says, I'm sorry, I'm sorry I lost my temper. And you go, it's only a matter of time before it'll happen again. You may state it or may not, but you believe it. This young man offers an apology that has regret, responsibility, and a remedy. I think a good apology would sound something like this. I am so sorry that I embarrassed you in front of our friends last night. I know that hurt you, and it's my fault, and I shouldn't have done it. And I'm making a promise to you that I will not use you as the brunt of a joke again in front of our friends. It'd be hard not to accept that apology, wouldn't it? Now, I realize you may say, you know, well, I'm still really hurt and it's going to take me a little while to get over it, but I do appreciate that. But that is an adequate apology. It states regret for what you did, as opposed to, I'm sorry you were so sensitive when I used you in that joke in front of our friends last night. I didn't realize you were so prickly about things. But I'm always at fault, and I'm at fault again, so I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. That doesn't work. That never works. Listen, that never works. The prodigal son gives us a beautiful example of what an apology should look like. Now, that's the apology. And when we offer an apology that has regret, responsibility, and a remedy, it's hard not to accept it. So how do you accept it? How should an apology be accepted? Forgiveness, like love, is something you do. It's not necessarily something you feel. It is something you do. Forgiveness is an action on your part. Look at Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 and 22 with me, if you would, please. Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 and 22. Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? And Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Now, do you think that Peter, let me give you an example. I'll use me and Dave. Let's say I walk up to Dave, and when I see him, I kind of slap him on the back really hard, and then realize I slapped him too hard, and I say, hey, Dave, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about slapping you that hard. I didn't really mean to do that. I kind of got carried away. And then a couple of minutes later, Dave says something funny, and I wail off and slap him on the back again. That was good. And I did it again. I'm sorry, Dave. Forgive me. I didn't mean to hit you that hard. And within the space of about an hour and a half, I have had to ask him 12 to 15 times to forgive me. When Jesus said to Peter to forgive somebody, not seven times, not even 10 times, not even 10 times seven times, but 70 times seven, I'm going to tell you something. You are not forgiving that many times necessarily from the heart. Your heart probably has checked out a long time ago, but you are now forgiving as an action. I have to do this. And there are times when, and here's what happens, sometimes in situations with couples and talking with them, I'll have one of them say, you know what, I just am so mad, I don't think I can forgive them. I'm that mad. I don't think I can forgive them. And if we've ascertained that the person who's asking forgiveness is truly penitent and they're expressing all those elements of regret and responsibility and a remedy, then I say to that mate, you know what? You don't really have the choice. It's not a matter of your feelings. It isn't a matter of feelings anymore. It's a matter of what you do. And you say, how can I do that? How can I forgive somebody that many times? And I say, because God's forgiven you that many times. I mean, God listens to me say over and over and over again, I'm sorry, God. I'm really sorry. And if I expect Him to forgive me, I have to forgive others. In fact, that Jesus put that as a caveat in His prayer when He taught the disciples to pray, didn't He? Forgive us our trespasses, what? As we forgive those who trespass against us in the same way. So if I want to be forgiven by God in this way, Ralph, I know you did it again. I'm really sorry that you did it again. But I'm really glad you recognized what you did and that you're asking forgiveness. And I accept that. If that's the way I want to be forgiven, then that's the way I've got to forgive others. So, just as an apology has three elements to it, so does accepting an apology. Number one, it has empathy. A good acceptance of an apology has empathy. To feel what the agonizing, apologizing person feels. To know what they're feeling. Knowing that we've been there too. Forgiveness is an act of admitting we're like other people. Listen, forgiveness is the act of admitting we're like other people. And sometimes somebody does something to us and our reaction to that is, well, that was a really dumb thing to do. And then I think, yeah, dumb like some of the things I've done. Or that was a thoughtless thing to do. Yeah, kind of like the thoughtless things I've done. That was a cruel, mean thing to do. Like the kinds of things Ralph does. If I can empathize, if I can feel what they're feeling, it's easier to accept their forgiveness or to offer forgiveness. Number two is compassion. Compassion is a longing to relieve suffering, especially of one we love so much. Compassion is love in action. Compassion says, I'm sorry you feel so badly about that. And especially the deeper the wound to you, probably the deeper the hurt to the person who caused it. And so if they're hurting because they hurt you, my feelings of compassion for them will try to relieve that. UN Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick on one occasion said, we have our wars when at least one of the parties in conflict wants something more than it wants peace. If what you want more than anything is peace, then you can work it out. If what you really want is peaceful feelings between you and the other person, it can work. And then the third element is grace. When all else falls, when I'm having trouble feeling empathy because I've never done that, if I commit adultery against my mate may say, I've never done that. So it's hard to feel empathy about that. When that one falls, and maybe when I'm having trouble with compassion because I think my hurt is so deep and they just don't seem to me to be expressing an equal amount of hurt because of what they caused me. When all else fails, there is grace. Grace to forgive. Grace is generosity. Grace is an undeserved gift. Grace is beauty, charm, and elegance. All those definitions come into play here. I can extend to them grace. Why? Because God gave it to me. Because God extends grace to one like me who doesn't deserve it. And you know, when God forgives me, God doesn't stand there with his hands folded saying, yeah, here you are again. What am I going to do with you? I guess I've got to forgive you, and I will, but it's going to take me a while to get over it. Just go away. You come back some other time. When I pray to God, God, forgive me of my sins. Please forgive me for what I've done against you. God doesn't say, again? How many times are we going to go through this, Ralph? How many times? When are you going to learn? And if he doesn't do that with me, and I expect him to welcome me as the father welcomed the prodigal home, then I've got to extend grace to others. So let me suggest to you, here's what that forgiveness might sound like. Listen to this. I thank you for apologizing. I know I'm not perfect either. And I've done things in the past to hurt you as much as you've done to me. I forgive you. I'm really glad we talked this through. And let's not let this be a barrier between us. We've been getting along so well lately. You're a wonderful wife, and I love you very much. In that acceptance are all the elements we talked about. There's the empathy. I've been there. I know I've hurt you in the past. There's the compassion. I forgive you. I'm glad we talked this through, and I don't want this to be a barrier between us. And there's the grace. You're a wonderful wife or husband, and I love you very much. When that apology is offered with that forgiveness, conflict is resolved. Anything less than that leaves us open to continued bitterness or unresolved conflict. Well, that's what I had for you this morning. We're going to stand adjourned for just a few minutes and we'll come back together again in our worship hour. Thank you so much for listening.